Welcome back to The Business or Show Business with me, Jamie Boddy. And today I'm joined by the lovely Dawn Farrow. So Dawn is a freelance marketing and sales consultant. She's the founder of On Sale Live, and she's also helped sell over 36 million tickets across theatre, immersive experience and live entertainment. So today we're cracking on all things arts marketing, working out why some shows sell more than others, and then all things The Business of Show Business. Dawn, how are you?
I'm extremely well, thank you.
I'm not shy to say I'm a big fan. On LinkedIn, everything you post, I'm like, comment, it's thought-provoking. So I'm so glad I managed to get you here, and I've locked the door, you can't leave.
I won't.
So you have been given a cracking title, and you've been called the accidental architect of a live experience revolution by Exhibition News. So again, put that on your LinkedIn, great title. What was accidental about your journey into this sphere? So did you start off on stage, backstage? What was your springboard into this world of entertainment?
Yes. What a great starter question. The answer is I was a dancer. I have wanted to be a dancer since the age of four. And I grew up near Grimsby up north. And so dancing was just an incredible thing to be able to do locally. Yeah. I did all the dance competitions. I fell in love with musical theatre. It was just amazing. And then I wanted to come to London. And I have an amazing family who are hugely supportive of that, but had no reference point for being in London. And were probably a bit nervous for me. The compromise was that I could absolutely come to London to train as a dancer, but would I please also do a degree in something? And so I studied business. And I made my way through. I never actually, once I'd finished my professional dance training and my business degree, I never actually became a dancer. There were moments, I mean, I think I was even meant to do the place prize, the choreography competition. And I remember having to pull out of that because I had a job. But the accidental part was actually fueled by, I guess, a deep-rooted love of the industry. And so in many senses, there's nothing really accidental about ending up here. The passion that I had at four for theatre is the same passion I now have when I get to sell experiences, which sort of is joyous.
Now working in the world of entertainment journalism and arts marketing, I've met so many people that are former dancers. And I always say that dance is such a gateway passion because the skills are transferable.
Yeah.
So is it safe to say that you find the world of marketing and sales just as creatively fulfilling? Because again, some of the marketing campaigns that are out now are so creative.
Yeah. Yes, I think so. And I also think that when I was early in my career, there was an observation very often that marketing was a poster. Yeah. And so I would interview lots of people that would, you know, you'd say, why would you like to do this? And they were potentially, you know, former dancers, actors, performers, and they would often talk about the poster. And what I would say is that creatively, we've really moved on from that in a big, big way. And so, yes, you know, it is creatively fulfilling because it's incredibly hard thinking about how to sell an experience, which is an emotional purchase. Like, you don't need it. I mean, some of us would argue we need it, but ultimately you don't need it, not like loo roll.
Yeah.
But what has changed is that kind of creativity meets science and analysis, which I think sometimes people are a bit afraid of, but I would say there's nothing to be afraid of there.
And you've worked at Live Nation and then AKA UK, which also, our paths didn't cross, but I worked at AKA as well. So working on marketing of arts and culture venues, musicals. But then you took the leap to set up your own agency, your Boom Ents, and you worked with Walking with Dinosaurs, Nitro Circus, Lunar Cinema, and the Birmingham Royal Ballet.
Yeah.
Quickly talk to me then about agency side, because there you are kind of fingers in all the pies, work with lots of different departments.
Mm.
So maybe agency side, and then what maybe gave you the courage to think, you know what? I want to start my own business.
So I didn't know that there was a job that meant you could work in marketing in this industry in an agency. And so I was working at Clear Channel Entertainment for David Ian, Gary McQuinn, Liz Coops, like incredible producers. Clear Channel became Live Nation. And ultimately, we all got made redundant. there was just a moment. I mean, it's quite secular, but ultimately in my mid-20s, like everybody yeah. got made redundant. And I was lucky. I had some good contacts and some good support and ended up at AKA. And I was, and it was early days. They just got Billy Elliot like that. I mean, the room was brimming with energy. It was incredible. And it really played into just this love and this energy that I had. And so it was incredibly long hours. I mean, but we made the deepest friendships that, you know, still stand now. And when I decided to set up my own business, it was not an easy decision, but I had for a really long time had a desire to do something on my own, to see if I could do it on my own. Yeah. And so one day I went into Adam Kenwright's office, who was the founder of AKA. And as I was talking to him, like we are, I saw on a shelf, there was a postcard and it said, "What would you do if you knew you couldn't fail?" And I saw, I just remember, and I was paying attention, obviously. And I just thought, I've got to do it. And so I set up my own agency. So it's still the same energy, but I would say about 10 times more anxiety. And yeah. I thought I was working long hours, but oh no, there were more hours.
Yeah.
So, you know.
It's funny because you see that post when they say, like, if you do something you love, you never work a day in your life. And we're like, people that do are like, you work like 72, 80 hour week, but you do something you love because your mind can't switch off. So it's funny, isn't it? How like, whether you are an agency owner, an account manager, an exec, whatever it is, I think it's in the arts, it kind of bleeds into like every aspect of yourself, doesn't it?
Yes. And I think that is both tremendously beneficial to the industry and to people like us, but it's also quite dangerous as well, which I think we'll come on to. But I think how we look after ourselves when we are so passionate about this industry is really important, because I certainly wasn't trained to look after myself. And, you know, we're sort of part of a new wave that is saying, how do we support one another better?
Yes, it's definitely a talking point a lot more now, I think. It's like almost lifting up the rose-tinted glasses. Whether you are on stage talent, backstage, marketing, whatever it is, we glamorize the hustle so much. And I've said this all the time, but it's the idea of when you have to be seen to always be working, but you have to be free at the same time. And you're like, I can't do both. What do I do?
Such a good point.
And so you, as an agency owner, how was that then, having to manage people? Because it was like a multi-million pound agency. So it wasn't like small change. You're having to deal with a lot of people, not only the external stakeholders, companies, but also being a manager. That's quite a shift that in the arts, there's not always the infrastructure, is there, to train someone up to be a manager?
Yeah. And to be really honest, there will be people that listen to this and say Dawn was the worst manager. I mean, like, I really had zero training in how to support staff and manage well-being. And partly, you know, my downfall there was that I just thought everybody was as wired as I was. You know, like, what do you mean you're not still up at 10 o'clock replying to emails? Like, just can't, this is my business, you know. But I have certainly, you know, taken lots of training and spoken to lots of people and got way better. But the reality is I found it really hard. And, you know, that balance between delivering the work for the clients and that, you know, that balance of the clients ultimately are paying my agency so that we can, you know, deliver marketing strategies and generate ticket sales for them. But whilst also acknowledging that there's only so much any person can do in any sort of given day.
Then when was the turning point when you thought, okay, I've done this, I now want to do something else and step away from running your own business? Because again, anyone listening, whether they are acting, a dancer or a freelancer and they want to change their workflow, it can be so scary because you're like, what's next? So that must have been magnified, owning this company, managing the staff. But you thought, you know, 2020, obviously maybe, I don't know, maybe it was pandemic led, I don't know, but you kind of thought, enough is enough. I want to try something else.
Yes. So the first thing to say is no, it had nothing to do with the pandemic, because actually it all happened literally 10 days before the pandemic. Well, I say it all happened. I didn't have a defining moment where I thought I'm done, but there was essentially a piece of maths I was able to do based on my business that said, this will always be a good business. It made money. I had some incredible staff members. I had an office, a beautiful office on Newman Street, you know, and it was reliant on, an amount of business, and it worked. But actually, when in agency land, there's quite a clear piece of maths that you learn. No one teaches you, obviously. Yeah. I learned over 8 years. I was like, okay. So to get from this to this, these are the things that need to change.
Yeah.
And I was looking at those elements and I just thought, I don't think I'm up for this. I don't want a board. Mm. I don't want investment. I don't want to be reporting in the way that would require. You know, there were just lots of different things. And I just thought, oh, wow, I think I'm done. I think that means it's okay. Like, I've done it and I've done it all on my own and I didn't take anybody's money. And And I was Dawn from Boomens for forever. And even the worry of letting that go was just like,
yeah.
And yet, you know, the worst bit was talking to my team, the absolute worst.
Yeah.
I was able, because it was pre-pandemic, I was able to get out of a 5-year rental deal to negotiate out of that. And so actually there was no financial downside to saying, oh, it's okay. It's okay to walk away. I was actually able to support my team and they all got jobs.
Right.
And I literally handed my keys to my landlord, went on a little holiday to Devon with my family and pandemic.
It's almost like what I'm hearing is you have a sixth sense. If you make any big decisions, I will copy you because you know what's coming around the corner.
It's incredible. I think in business, you occasionally get a piece of luck thrown at you. And I didn't end Boom in the way that I thought I might. There was no big exit. There were no millions of pounds, right? Yeah. That was quite a naive dream.
Yeah.
But I got many different gifts. And I think ultimately that the way it ended was extraordinary.
And so obviously you now repackage all that knowledge and your connections to work as a consultant. Yeah. But what is there, if this is possible, something that you can tell, whether it's an immersive experience, live entertainment or show, that you think, yes, this is going to generate revenue? Because again, a lot of actors, writers, producers listen to this podcast and they want to take a show to Edinburgh Fringe. They want to go on a small tour. They potentially want to upscale. Is there anything that you think is a common thread that runs through shows that typically actually make a profit as opposed to just break even?
Yeah, what a great question. I guess my first answer is that joyously, neither I nor AI or any of us actually know that equation. Mm-hmm. And it is why we are the most entrepreneurial industry in the entire world. Perhaps maybe bar fashion, right? Where they also get to experiment in the same way creatively. So I don't actually know the answer to that. But what I would say, there are some really important parts of that producing journey that allow me as a marketer to work out whether what you're producing will work. And I think that some of those levers are about the ability to create a good budget, like genuinely not a budget that is like, and I think we'll sell all of the tickets. You won't. Nobody is selling all of the tickets. Maybe Paddington right now.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah.
But I mean, that's it in the whole of the UK, right? So learning how to do a really shrewd budget, but also the ability, a producer's ability to make decisions.
Yes.
And that is an incredible skill.
It also stems from that whole idea you've got star for your art as well, hasn't it? We do it because we love it, whether again on stage or off stage. And it's actually like, no, like this is a business.
Yeah.
So as a marketer, what level of a journey of a show do you like to be brought on? Or what level do you think would be the best point to bring on a consultant, whether they are in-house, freelance, whatever it is? When should a marketer join a production?
Yes. So It really depends. I think the first thing is to identify what a marketer does, because I think that there is, again, goes back to the idea of like, well, don't you get someone to do a poster? Well, at some point, maybe we start talking about creative, but actually great marketing is actually about great sales. Great sales is about great ticketing. Great ticketing is about strategy, not just about the price of your tickets, but the platform that that you want to sell through. And also, what is the experience in relation to that pricing policy that you're about to create? And all of those factors are thought about alongside location, how long you want to play in that space for, what time of day are you going to play? Is this timed entry or is it, a traditional 7:30 curtain up and curtain down? You know, there's so many different factors. So depending on your project, I would always encourage everyone to speak to a marketing person, agency, team as early as possible. That doesn't mean they start charging you, because I don't know a single marketer that would do that. But for example, I'm currently working with a couple of projects. They're literally pre-seed. So they have some development money, they have the visions, and they are now wanting to use great marketing people to put in their deck to help them secure the 20 million they need to make the project happen.
I'm going to say something that I might get some heat from this, but as performers, we are in sales to an extent, in the fact of you're selling your skills.
Yeah.
You're then working with a show to help sell that. That's not what you are. I'm not saying you are a car salesman, but we are in a certain level of sales as a performer. Yeah. So what advice would you maybe give for a freelancer? So again, they could be a creative writer, producer, or a performer. Are there any marketing tips you would give or sales tips to help them at all? So whether that's their social media, how to network in person, what would you then pick up and drop onto a freelancer for sales?
So the first thing is, I absolutely agree with you. We are salespeople, and I would lap that up, because I genuinely think that performers are incredible at selling themselves. The soft skills that we have learnt, the ability to walk into a room, even if it's a version of us we're taking into the room, right? That's fine. I would also controversially say, you're not selling 2 or 3 Land Rovers a year, right? We're secondhand car salesmen. You are selling volume. Right? So, and that is a different energy again. And again, don't be embarrassed. I think that's incredible, right? And so I think it's a mindset. Now, people will go, that's not true. I struggle with networking, right? Like I love this.
Yeah.
I love certain environments. But I, walking into those big rooms and thinking, where do I start? I'm not always too sure. And that is okay. So I don't feel that we all need to be great marketers. You need to probably just have extraordinarily thick skin, which again, you already have as performers, right? Like that is, you're literally born for marketing and being able to keep pitching and keep working. And so when it comes to the practical side of marketing, of selling tickets, that thick skin, that we tried this, it didn't work, it's working, do more of it. There isn't a magic wand for building brands and selling live experiences, but there is an incredible toolbox that is available to me, to you, to anybody. Like, it's a level playing field, which is kind of fascinating, I think.
And would you say then, as a consultant, someone who's maybe got a bit more of a bird's eye view now with your history in the industry, would it be more valuable to a company if an actor, singer, dancer comes in with a strong personal brand that doesn't necessarily, as you said, they don't need to be a top-end C-suite marketer, but what that does mean is that they know what they're offering, they can work well with other people's, they know what skills to put forward. Would that make them more employable or easier to work with, in your opinion?
In my opinion, 100%. So when you get to the point of interview, I still believe this. It's about energy match.
Yeah.
I still believe, and I do know lots of people struggle with the process of, getting the application scene and that sort of thing. So I do think about how to write your best application. Be careful about the use of AI. what we're seeing is some incredible work come out of AI now. So we've slightly got rid of the ChatGPT slop. We're now into every CV and covering letter is so incredible that we know you didn't write it.
Yes.
So again, it then will come back to energy. Like what am I getting? And with energy, just be mindful that it's like the difference between turning up for an audition and almost going in costume with hair and makeup and you're already the character. Well, that casting director is not looking for that. The casting director is looking for you going into the room and you showing your best self.
Yeah.
And so that is the same as an interview. Like, don't be the over the top version of you. Just be you.
Yeah, I can tell you some stories. When I sat on casting panels, having been a performer, one time for Cats, someone came with the Alice band with cat ears and a fairy leg warmer. And I was like, we know you're not a cat. You don't need to try and dress as one. And then when I worked at Disney, someone once came in dressed as, I don't want to get sued, so a friend of Snow White came in, cherub cheeks, red thing, hair back, but was actually too small. So it actually took them out of the casting director's vision because I can't really see you for anything else because you've come in so wrapped up in what you think we want, but it's not actually what we want.
Yes.
Experience economy, that's a buzzword. But again, everything is an experience now. And more and more when you see shows, they are doing experiential marketing collaborations. Yeah. You are selling the feeling. So what exactly is experience marketing and why should brands, shows, whatnot get on board with it?
Yeah, great question. So I talk about myself as being a non-technical marketer working across the experience economy. And when I talk about the experience economy, what I mean is we are vying for attention across theatre, attractions, museums, galleries, consumer events, immersive, music festivals. I mean, the list is endless. Even experiential travel is in there. Mm. And the reality is that consumers, we know that the data tells us, consumers are not going, should we go to a theme park or a museum? Like, consumers are saying, what should we do? What should we do? Yeah. Let's do something. Like, let's have an experience. And there are, of course, times when it's very much about going to the West End.
Yes.
As a brand, absolutely. Generally speaking, we're talking about attention. Like, where do I want to spend my money? Where do I want to give my attention to? And so for me, great marketing in the experience economy is about cross-sector knowledge, cross-sector sharing, and really thinking about how do I get your attention to want to do this thing with me? Mm. And that is where experience marketing comes in. This idea that, back to the point, you don't need what I'm selling. But if I can tell you how to feel, if I can show you what you're missing out on, you're definitely going to want to come.
And I think it's that whole idea now that attention and concentration are two of the biggest currencies, aren't they?
Yes.
So it's actually like,
yes.
I was actually just before this lecture with some students and we're talking about an Edinburgh Fringe show and the idea of like, there's so many shows. What is the hook? What is that? And I said, actually, TikTok as a platform, it's chaos at times, but you have to be good at generating a hook on that platform now. So I said to a lot of the students, I was like, you're probably actually good at least identifying a hook, even if you don't know how to create one in the marketing capacity yet. But that idea of that catching attention is so important. And that kind of goes back to as a performer as well. How are you capturing that agent or that producer or casting director's attention?
Yes. Yeah. And there's two parts to that, because I think that when I was a bit younger, a lot of the sort of standout hooks were about shock. So I kid you not, like everyone's naked on stage. Like, nobody needs to see that now. I mean, I don't know. I don't particularly. I'm not going to buy a ticket for that.
No.
There was a club night and it was full of cabaret acts and there was one particular performer and they, I'm sorry about this, but anyway, it was art, but anyway, then they would almost make it look like they had been for a poo.
Mm.
And then they would throw it in the audience. People were like, this is crazy. It's art. You know? And it's like, so that's that shocking element. And I think we're done with that. I really do. Because I think we've pushed it. The standout things, I saw this great article the other day, and this of course is in America, and it was all tech, but essentially lots of tech startups out there in Silicon Valley. And the guy who started sending his CV out. I think it was his CV or it was his business pitch. Anyway, essentially on a cake. They printed it on a cake. Here, you have one printed. I think so much so that I think his second business is now printing cakes for people because everyone. Yeah. And of course that bubble will burst.
Yeah.
But those sorts of things that are kind of going back, much more analog, much more in person. That is a lot of the data is saying, of course we love AI for certain things, but gosh, what we actually want are in-person experiences. Yeah.
There was years ago, I can't remember what company it was. It was for like, it was a tech company or Spotify or something. Someone had their CV printed on the top of a car and parked the car in the car park. So when the manager looked out the window, they would see it. Like, again, as a touch point, you're going to go to that CV first, aren't you? As opposed to the 25 in your inbox.
Yeah.
Speaking of maybe some taboos or not to do, red flags in regards to marketing. I know this will be specific to projects, but you as a sales and marketing consultant, what are some things you would try and say to someone, avoid doing, or if you get that in a pitch, you're like, take that out immediately. Are there any red flags?
Oh, yeah. Are there? Okay. Biggest red flag. This event is for everyone. No, it's not. It literally, that's impossible. And even if you believe that to be true, who is it for first? So just double down on that because nobody has a budget like Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola for everyone. Sure. Knock yourself out. But unless you have that budget, no. Like you're not. Don't be for everyone. And that's quite interesting because actually we talk about on Instagram, it talks a lot about niching down on social media generally. It's okay to niche down. It's okay that if you've only got 100 bums to get, you know, in a night, it's okay to niche down. Like it really is. So I would say that is my biggest red flag. I would also say a red flag is the inability to be open to suggestion. And that could be in any part of your marketing mix. So creatively, for example, being a graphic designer in live entertainment, it can be really hard because you create your brief, you create the vision, and then there's about 20 people you've never met have got a good opinion of your, you know, it's so subjective. And I think if you are a graphic designer, you have to have extraordinarily thick skin in that moment. But I would also say that if you build a really positive relationship with a graphic designer, you'll never regret that. You'll never regret, and or photographer or videographer, you know, that ability to find a shorthand creatively with someone is really powerful. Yeah. I would always encourage that.
And I think the understanding of niching down or knowing how to repackage yourself is such a skill that all freelancers should know. And I have this all the time when I work with performers on their packet for when they're pitching themselves for shows, agents, casting directors. And it's like, yes, you're a versatile actor. You have been trained in multiple things, but when you can do anything, you do nothing. So it's like, how do you get in the room and then you unpack your skills? So you've got multiple casting types. Doesn't mean you need 10 headshots that show you every emotion known to man. It's like, no, what is your initial touch point that you're most recognizable for, what you're strongest at, and then branch out. So I love that you said that niching, because before it's like, oh, don't niche, you need to be able to do everything. But again, you can't. It's going to dilute your product, your time and your energy.
Yes, yes.
So let's talk about On Sale Live, which is very exciting. First of all, what is it? I'm very excited. I get to be involved in a small part this year, so I'm so excited. But what is On Sale Live?
So On Sale Live was a direct response to working in marketing for a very long time and being invited or going to lots of different conferences. So you can find a marketing conference for brands. You know, you can be around Procter & Gamble and big brands like that. And you can find ticketing events. But actually, I realized there was not a single event that was purely for sales, marketing, and communications people.
Yeah.
No arena in which we could come together to talk openly about what's working, what's not, who's trying this, where do we get learnings from, what's the latest technology? Because we need something very distinct because we are essentially trading in attention and tickets, such a different skill set to the broader marketing world. And of course, ticketing is very much part of what we do, but it is not uniquely what we do. The other uniqueness about On Sale Live is this, my passion for the experience economy. And so the room is cross-sector. So, you know, one minute you'll be listening to the team from Sonia Friedman talking about Paddington. Yeah. And I think they're talking, I think that's around fandom. And then the next panel, on the main stage at least, we've got this incredible company called Blast who run esports leagues globally, talking about the rise of interactive experiences. Mm. And then you'll have Crystal Maze talking about, you know, the growth of the fashion and the change in how we engage with live experiences. Yeah. And so that's the event. We have a main stage, an expert zone where people are going to be able to learn about the latest AI search or the latest rules around ticketing, for example. We've got incredible case study from Mamma Mia the Party. And then we also, and this goes back to one of our earlier points, we have a whole space dedicated to personal development. Mm. And so we have a day of workshops that are about developing your leadership skills. Where was that when I needed it? Or we've got free one-to-one coaching that if people want to really double down on their personal needs. We've got a whole session that our partners DeWinters are running around how to use your skills to move your career forward and what that might look like in an AI-driven world. And so all of those things come together. Yeah. It's all wrapped in community. Yeah. We have this amazing WhatsApp community of marketers. And the day, there will be tea, there will be coffee, there will be exhibitor stands, and we will, you know, we will share learning, which is going to be exciting.
I feel like the Paddington team will be like, two words, Olivier Awards. That's how you market a show.
And I will say, and does that sell tickets?
Yes, they need that. So you spoke a lot about AI, which I think is such a talking point in the arts because as journalistically, I've covered it quite a lot in the arts because I think it comes from a point of fear and it will take all of our jobs. So yes, that is definitely a vibe. There's something happening there. That conversation anyway, but obviously, but actors are being smart now. Agents are, they're having it in their contracts of like clauses, like you can't reuse my voiceover for this and that, which is great. But AI is also in the other side of the world of non-necessary arts. It's helping so much. It's creating systems. It's giving back time. I've seen the pros and cons of both. So I definitely think it's not going anywhere. And I've even seen now dance shows like Wayne McGregor's new experience like that incorporates tech and like, so it's how can we marry them up? And which I think you're such a champion of. And obviously going from SEO, so search engine optimization, to AEO and answer engine optimization, AI for you, yay or nay, and why should people be using it?
Yes, massive yay. A massive yay because I'm a marketer.
Yeah.
And so AI for me, or for the marketing side of, you know, the experience economy, can only make us better. And it has removed walls that existed that are particularly around digital knowledge and digital, there was sort of, sometimes with tech, there is a language that is used that can make it feel like, oh, I'm not on the inside of that conversation. AI removes a lot of that. And so that opportunity to have a play and see what works is extraordinary.
Yeah.
Now, I champion AI for productivity, right? Yeah. That's my thing. And so you can go onto our website and you can download like loads of free resources that say, this is how to get started. This is how to be productive with AI. Here's what not to be scared of. Here's, don't do this.
Yeah.
That's, you know, and so here's how to set yourself up. Here's the five steps you need to do if you, you know, you just want to get started and have a little bit of a play. What I would say is you've got to get going.
Yeah.
Like you can absolutely decide to make some sort of moral stance, but there's this sentiment around it's not AI that will actually take your job.
Yeah.
It's the person that can use AI.
Yeah. And I love what you said there about productivity over creativity. Use AI to help you along your way. But it still needs creative people. The world needs creative people.
More than ever. Yeah. I think what we'll see is just more creative need because the AI slop. And yeah. Listen, I've been experimenting a lot and someone sent a really nasty message to me about how shit something was, sorry. But, and I was like, but I give myself permission to have a go and see. And all of those learnings that go back into my, whether it's AI slop or not, like all the lessons go back in and I get better at it and better at using it.
It's that exposure therapy, isn't it? The more you're exposed to something and trial and error, you get better. So again, going back to as an actor, singer, dancer, you're not born doing Brecht and there singing the top G. You have to make mistakes. So I do think as a marketer now, like, Claude, please sponsor this. We love AI, Claude.
Yes.
It's great. And the systems it can create. But going back to kind of the linchpin of marketing, and now, do you feel the words diluted? Because I predominantly work in the world of like social media marketing.
Yeah.
But they want videographers, photographers, copywriters, graphic designers, social, community management, report. And it's like, yes, I can do a little bit of everything, but I'm not a specialist in, say, like graphic design, nor do I have the time to do 20 things. Do you find marketing now can get a little bit diluted, or are people wanting too much for the buck and saying, you're a marketer, do this?
So I have always trained to be a jack of all trades and a master of none.
Yeah.
Like I am the ultimate at that. The joy of that is that I can be hired and I, much like yourself, you will know everyone that can do all of those different elements if you need them. What happens when you're a jack of all trades and a master of none is that the budget doesn't change. So there is no bigger budget, right? So I, because I'm very old, when I started marketing, we would divide our marketing mix up and so there was a lot of out of home in there, traditional print advertising, maybe a bit of radio, love. Now, then, Meta ads, or we called them just Facebook ads. Anyway, but so then you needed to find budget for that. And you're right. And then we had to find budget for a social media manager, but that was okay because they got 20p a week because nobody valued their skills then.
Yeah, I remember when I first started at AK in 2016, like it was so hard pushing to like your show needs this. But yeah, so you're preaching. Yeah,
totally. So there's a value. There's an interesting value thought there. But the budgets are so carefully curated, I suppose, for marketing because they are a percentage of the gross potential of the house, of the number of tickets that might be possible to sell. So that's why the budget can't get any bigger because there's a cap. There really is for producers. And so that goes back to my point of, in the same way that you can't be an event for everybody, nor can you use every single toolbox available to you. But there are more free elements of the toolbox than there ever were before.
Mm-hmm.
And that is quite exciting, I think.
Before I close out of our quick fire questions, I deal with a lot of performers who are stepping out of the industry for whatever reason. They've ticked everything off. They want to earn more money, have a fab, whatever it is. Yeah. What advice would you give to someone who maybe wants to get into the realm of marketing and sales? Because I will hold my hand up and say, every performer, as you said, would be great at sales. They'd be great at marketing. They might not have the degree in it, but they'd be good at it. So what advice would you give to someone who wants to get into creative marketing?
Yes. So firstly, I would say it's okay to move on. So it's okay to say, I know I spent a lot of money training in X, but now I need to pay my rent. I'm moving on. Give yourself permission. Like you will look back and you it will be okay.
Yeah.
I would also then say, find people you like, find businesses you like, find, particularly if you're a woman, like look for other great women in business. Mm-hmm. People will always be happy to find 20 minutes for a Zoom, right? Like it may not always be a face-to-face, but just find people you might like to meet with. We, as part of our community, we have a jobs board in our WhatsApp group.
Yeah, it's great.
I can't believe how many jobs are coming through. I mean, incredible opportunities. Mischief Theatre, I think they posted 2 jobs last week. I mean, and not all marketing manager level, like starting out executive level. So, find places to look for roles and, apply. And okay, maybe you won't get it straight away, but look at the criteria and have a think about, okay, how could I build that skill set to demonstrate? I did a lot of volunteering when I was trying to get work. I know that's not possible for everybody, but if you can, I would definitely, I've got a couple of people working on Sell Live And they're literally like, I will give you my time because I want to be in the room.
Yeah.
I'm like, I want you to be in the room as well. Let's do this.
Yeah. One of my favorite things is working with an actor or singer dancer and looking at their CV and being like, right, you were vocal or dance captain. Let's literally quickly look at how that works in a non-performative job. It's that stakeholder management. It's the empathy, time management. You do well under pressure. We unpick all these skills. Yeah. And they're like, oh, and I'm like, yes, there's so much value. So I think just do the thing. Right, before I let you go, we're going to do our quick fire round, which is called Lights, Questions, Action. Please get out the pyro and the live animals. Okay, so we're starting off. So again, whatever comes to the top of your head, it's relaxed. But remember, you're in sales, so be good.
Yes, yeah, always.
Okay, what was your first job in the arts and culture sector, whether that was on stage or in marketing?
Oh, my first job was marketing in an office for a dance company and dance studio.
What was the first show you ever saw?
I saw Me and My Girl at Hull New Theatre with Gary Wilmot, and it was amazing.
That man's a legend, isn't it? Oh, I did pants with him in third year.
And I'm did like, you? Yeah,
it's a great man.
Me and My Girl.
What would be your favourite show or immersive experience? And now we are putting you on the line. What's your favourite?
Favourite ever was years ago, was in New York. I saw 42nd Street on 42nd Street. Just wild.
What has been your proudest moment of your career?
Honestly, like closing Boom, walking away.
Yeah.
And that was a lot, but it was also the beginning of everything.
What has been the best advice you've ignored or not taken?
Oh, the best advice to ignore was when I was working at Clear Channel, and in an appraisal, I asked for something and I got told that I would have to learn to walk before I could run.
You were like, I'm jogging now.
I'm literally pegging it out of the door.
You're like, I'm on a treadmill. One thing people outside the industry never understand, because again, marketing is, you see it in TV shows. I was saying that to someone, I was like, marketing is not Emily in Paris. There's so much to it. So what has been one of the most misconceived or myths you hear about the industry?
Oh, that it's easy. That marketing is easy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is your non-negotiable in business?
Oh, I mean, classic marketing. What do I have?
Or if someone said to you, it's like these many hours or weekends, are you like, no?
You're right. I mean, I work a lot of the weekends, but I had someone once try and put it in a contract and I was like, absolutely no.
No, not at all. Who would play you if it was Dawn Farrow, ticket sales extraordinaire? Who would play you?
Yeah.
But you do look very much like Keira Knightley. Do you get that?
Well, I did when I was younger, particularly. So yeah, let's go Keira Knightley.
Not to force that casting on
you. No, but that was the name that came to mind. And yeah, she's pretty epic.
No, you look like her. And I'm like, I feel like I need those cue cards from like Love Actually here as I'm asking you. If you started again tomorrow, what would be the very first thing you did?
Oh, open a social media account.
And we've been on a podcast. So do you like a text message or a podcast size voice note?
Oh, how wonderful. Yeah, I love a voice note. I mean, they always make me chuckle that I had to receive a voice note rather than the message. I love it. Yeah.
Well, perfect. Well, that's all that's left to say is make sure you subscribe or follow and make sure you still get your tickets, because there's time, isn't it?
There is a bit of time.
Yes. Perfect. Well, thank you so much, Dawn.
Thank you so much, Jamie.